Today we've got a special guest, which is like a bit fun. But before we go into that, I just want to ask one question, right? What happens when you leave your life behind because of trauma or drama or whatever it is, and come into a new world where you want a new life, you think you're going to have a new life, then COVID hits? Well, we've got a very special guest today, Shane Horton, and he has a very exciting story. And you'll see there'll be links, very subtle links between Dino and Dino's story and Shane's story. And there's also another commonality, but we'll leave this the story. So hello, Shane, how are you?
Hey, doing well, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Well, thank you for being here, Shane. It's really, really cool.
Absolutely.
So before we start, tell us a bit who Shane is and where you're at.
Well, my name's Shane Horton. I'm from North Carolina. I moved out here three years in December. And I currently work in Carlsbad. That wasn't always like that.
Well, I think what we need to do is go back from where you were in North Carolina. And that's another link between you and Dino, because that's where Dino is at the moment. So tell us a bit about what happened. Why did you leave North Carolina to come to San Diego?
So I was born and raised in Greensboro. I went off to college in Greenville, and then I went to law school in Charlotte. So I've been in North Carolina my whole life. I grew up, my mother was a drug addict, and at a young age, I was playing babysitter to her. And when I went off to college, I kind of cut my family out of my life and did my own thing. And then three years ago, so April of 2019, my mother took her life. I hated being a lawyer. I hated my job. I just wanted to start over. So I packed my bags and my dog, and I drove across the country to San Diego. I got to California December 5th of 2019. And things were okay at the beginning, and then COVID hit, and I was homeless on March 3rd of 2020 in Carlsbad and Oceanside.
Wow.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So that was quite something, right? Leaving your home, your relatively safe home, okay, relatively, it sounds relatively, leaving that and then coming to be homeless in San Diego. Wow. Where did you go from there? I mean, did you feel like, hey, I want to go back? Or what did you do?
You know, that was never even a thought. I remember March 3rd, I was in a hotel for a week and the money just finally ran out. Like, I had jobs lined up and everything. I'm well educated. Like, that was all, it was supposed to work out, and it didn't. Everything was closing. The jobs fell through. But I remember when all the money was gone and my dog and I was in Carlsbad. I don't know anything about the city. And I looked at him. I can cuss on here, right?
Yeah, sure.
Why not? Well, I looked at him and I said, dude, we're screwed. I don't know what we're going to do. I'm coming from, you know, a white collar career. I don't know anything about being on the streets, and I don't know anything about the city. And I looked at him and said, we're fucked, dude. But no, I never once thought about going home. I put that part of my life behind me. And well, one, I couldn't get home. I didn't have any money. Mm-hmm. And so we just kind of rolled with the punches at that point. We didn't know. I didn't know left from right. Luckily, I met the right people and I learned how to survive for 2 years out there.
Wow. Okay, Dino?
No, I mean, it's just incredible. And actually, I think I was in San Diego right around the time you were, because that COVID lockdown was no joke. It hit the big cities, obviously, in California, I think, were one of the first. And so, I mean, it was difficult enough as it was for me. Imagine being homeless on top of it. It's got to be very frightening, terrifying, right?
Yeah. And so I'm coming to, because I'd always had aspirations of coming to Southern California. I'd been here a few times, but like to move here, it was like, yeah, I'm finally doing it. And, you know, Southern California, sun, and I didn't know about rainy season. So here we are in March, no shelter or anything, and it's cold and rainy. And just like, what the heck? And so that was a whole other thing. And like I said, I met the right people. I learned how to survive. It wasn't easy, but I always had a drinking problem, always. The homelessness did not, I didn't start drinking because I was homeless. That was always there. It started in high school, like most people, and then in college, and then law school is really when things ramped up. But being homeless, there's nothing else to do. So get your hands on whatever money you can and feed the habit that I had already had, and it just progressively got worse. So for two years out there, my drinking escalated tremendously, and here's the sick part of it is being out there. I had no responsibilities. I didn't have bills. I didn't have to answer to anyone. I got to do what I enjoyed doing. I was so sick mentally that I convinced myself that that was okay. That life was fine. That, you know, trying to find a place to sleep at night wasn't that big of a deal. We could get by. And everything was okay. Like, that's how twisted my brain was from being out there, that I convinced myself that life was okay, and I was okay with that for a while.
Well, probably that kept you alive. I mean, you had to almost trick your mind, like, this is okay. Otherwise, I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, I would freak out, you know. But you had to get in that mindset that, you know, this is what I got to do right now to survive, right?
Yeah, and it I know for the first year it was just like there was a large learning curve, and I didn't, like, I was constantly learning every day. But I'll say this now that I'm sober now, 7 months as of Monday. I did have fun out there. I laughed every day. I met some great people. I wouldn't take my time on the streets away. Like, it shaped me, it formed me into who I am now. But that being said, I am glad I'm past that. But back to being out there, that first year, you know, a lot of exploring. I did a bunch of things I never thought I'd do. I've seen things I've never thought I'd ever see. Like, but after a while, it was having my dog was a large limitation for me to get help. Like, I had always said when I was out there that I called it my homeless vacation. I said my homeless vacation would come to an end. Now, whether I really believed that or not, I don't know, but I did say it a lot. But having my dog really hindered my ability to get help, because I wasn't, like, that's all I have. I don't have family. I have my dog. And so that helped me back. That's probably why my vacation lasted longer than it did. But luckily I met the right people, and he got taken in, and he's safe, and the things progressed into what they are.
So you knew you needed help way before you received it.
I knew I needed help before I came to California. I knew my drinking was out of hand. But I'd never gotten in trouble with it. Like I'd never seen the negative repercussions of my drinking. I've never been arrested until we'll get to that. But I'd never been arrested. No DUIs, no nothing. I would drink and drive all the time. I drove across the country under the influence. Like, I never saw a negative ramification of it. Mm-hmm. So it was just, and then over time, my body needed it. And I convinced myself that I could do X, Y, and Z better if I was a little, like, I was sick. I was really sick.
Yeah. Yeah. All the reasoning in your head, justification why it's okay. Yep. And it's actually the reinforcement. Like you said, I didn't get a ticket. I don't have a DUI. I've never been arrested. And you mentioned a white collar background, law. For some reason, you don't think that it happens to you. You hear about people who are alcoholics or drug addicts, and you're like, well, that's them. That's not me. And at least for me, that false understanding of this addiction is kind of like, I mean, it's misleading. You think, well, yeah, I drink too much, or, you know, I party too much, but, you know, I'm certainly not a problem, right? But, yeah. You know, to be homeless is obviously, you know, something that's just very, very terrifying. I mean, for anybody who thinks that's a joke, I mean, try being homeless. I mean, you adapt it, but still, I mean, where do you live? You could get beat up. You could get robbed. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that come along with the territory, right?
Yeah. So,
tell us a bit, Shane. Sorry, Dino. Tell us a bit about your experiences in being homeless, right? So Dino was talking about being beat up and being robbed. Tell us a bit about your experiences.
So I was very well liked in the homeless community. I got along with everyone. I had three rules that I lived by. I don't steal from people. You show respect, you get respect, and you never put a hands on a woman. And I was very well perceived out there. I never stole from people. I never had anything for people to steal from me. I had my dog with me, so that was a nice... I mean, he's as sweet as can be, but people are standoffish when it comes to the dog. So and then Carlsbad it's like a country club for homeless. You go to Oceanside and Vista and stuff like that. It's a little more rigid. So I felt safe for the most part in Carlsbad. Now, we did run into some hiccups along the way. Let's see. The first year and a half was pretty. I went pretty unscathed. Probably this time last year is when I got handcuffs put on me the first time. So I went to the drunk tank. It's not really arrest. They just kind of put you in there and sober you up and let you go. So nothing came. Again, no negative. They just gave me a place to sleep for the night. Then 2 days later, I got 5150'd. I was screaming some suicidal things, and they put me in the loony bin for 72 hours. That was my biggest concern. There was my dog. Luckily, the police brought him to the Humane Society, and I got him out the next day. So that all worked out. Then I'd had a few bouts with what's it called? When your skin gets infected, your blood, like staph. I had some staph infections that got really, really nasty. And that's when I met the people at the Showers of Blessings. And that's when I got my in with like medical care, and I got to see a psychiatrist for a little while. So that helped. Then I go to the hospital, and this was the bookmark of when, like, hey, things are getting serious and I need to, something needs to work itself out. One night I got beat up, and it was a night before the showers. And then Tuesday that showers, I couldn't make it. I couldn't walk. And wow. People went over there and got a couple people from showers, one of them being the woman who was watching my dog currently. They came over and they were like, you need to go to the hospital. And I refused. I wasn't going to go. I wasn't going to leave my dog. Like, it wasn't going to happen. And then this woman said that she would watch him. I conceded and I went. And I was there for a month. I was in the ICU for 2 weeks. I had sepsis, pneumonia, the flu, a concussion, and I had a seizure when I was in the ambulance on the way there. Wow. So, yeah. And so I'm in the hospital for a month. And, you know, like, this is my sick brain. It wasn't that bad. I had a place to sleep. I had, you know, medicine that took place of the alcohol. I had nurses waiting on me hand and foot. I had free food. I got to watch TV. It wasn't that bad. And this is me rationalizing everything. I knew my dog was safe. So I got a little month-long vacation in the hospital. And I had to relearn how to walk. I did all this stuff. It was nuts. And then what do I do when I get out of hospital? I go right back to what I was doing. So that was this time last year. I got out of hospital November 2nd of last year. And then about a month later, in the middle of the night, I got my teeth kicked in. So these two front teeth are fake. And that was the first, like, true, like, getting punched and stuff wasn't, like, that was nothing to me. But this was a little different. This was with someone who I considered to be a really close friend, someone's life who I'd saved when he overdosed. Like, this one caught me off guard, and I'm extremely vain, and to not have my front teeth for as long as I did was a struggle. So that's when I was like, shit, like, this isn't cool. I didn't take action right away. I kept doing what I was doing, you know. I played the part even more. Oh. So like, I had no front teeth, and I got to look homeless and just be homeless. So I didn't take any action in changing my life at that point, but it was in the back of my head. I was like, dude, like, it changed my demeanor. I wasn't laughing as much. I wouldn't talk to strangers like I normally would. I was turning into one of those invisible people that most people consider homeless people. Then I got arrested for peeing in public. Now, everything I've said was fine. I don't do jail. I've never been to jail. I'm not going to jail. Like, that is not in my cards. And I was in the back of the cop car, and he just did a book and release on me. But I said, am I going to do real jail time for this? And he looked at me through the rearview mirror and he said, yes, Shane, you're going to go to jail for this. And I looked at him and I said, you want to bet? That's when I had to change something. That was my cue to get the help I needed. And that's what I did. Mary, the woman who's watching my dog, said that whenever I was ready to make a life change, that she would take him back in. With jail looming over my head, that's when I needed to make the change. I'm not going to jail. That's not happening. So on March 23rd, of this year, I wake up in my favorite park. I take my last drink. and I come to the Fellowship Center in Escondido, California. I do 10 days of detox. That sucked. And then I go into the residential program. Now, I was in the program for 120 days. The beginning of the program was terrible. The first 30 days, there's a liquor store right across the street. I would stand on the corner of our property and stare at it, knowing I could probably get away with going over there and drinking and no one would catch me. But for how long, I don't know. I wasn't here because of court. The more I learn about these petty tickets, that cop was probably just trying to scare me. I probably never would have gone to jail for that. I could have rationalized myself going over to that liquor store and drinking a million times, but something kept me here. Something kept me from not doing that. At the time, I didn't know what. After about a month, I saw a psychiatrist. I got on the proper medication. I take my antidepressants, my anti-anxieties, all that stuff. And I didn't have to do like a medication shuffle. Like they got it the first time. So I tipped my cap to, you know, modern medicine, because that's when things started to change for me mentally. And then in May, I got my teeth back, and that was a total game changer. My confidence went back up, and so all these things just keep happening. They say in the program, you do good and good follows. So, and I was seeing it over and over. I used to think that I was a load of shit, but I just constantly, just all these blessings were just coming my way. And it just, by not drinking, like I still kind of can't wrap my head around it. But so I'm progressing through the program. My attitude's changing. The staff is noticing it. Everyone's seeing like I'm coming out of my shell. I'm blossoming, all that cliche stuff. And towards the end of the program, I wasn't sure where I was going to go. I didn't have a job or anything. Like this is when the rubber meets the road, and you've got it. Like this is the treatment part is easy, but once you leave the program, that's when recovery starts. That's when sobriety happens. I'm in a safety net here. I'm protected. Like no one's going to jump out of the bushes, and like there's no triggers. There's no temptation on this property. Going out into the real world, that's where you're testing your sobriety. And a lot of that has to do with having like an action plan, like knowing where you're going to go, knowing where you're going to live, who you're going to surround yourself with, where you're going to get, where you're going to make your money, all that stuff. And my time out on the streets, I developed really good relationships with people who were trying to help me. I don't know why they were trying to help me. Everyone keeps saying, I'll get to that. So I've developed good relationships, and I kept in contact with some of these people while I was in here. And I just happened to go, I was about 100 days sober at this point. I just happened to call one of these people who have been helping me over the past 2 years. And she worked for the city of Carlsbad, and she said, we're hiring for, you know, this position, and I think you'd be great for it. And I didn't think anything of this, but I had a resume. My resume is great. I don't have any blemishes on my record. All that stuff was taken care of. And so I shot them my resume, just thinking nothing would come of it. The next day I get an email for an interview. Great. So I have a Zoom interview. That went great. They scheduled me for a second one. That I didn't think went as well. And with, you know, the addict mindset, you know, I'm catastrophizing everything. I'm like, oh, there's no way I'm going to get this job. It's not happening. Like, I'm just, everything's out the window. I leave the program on August 2nd. No, the job is looming. I don't know. I hadn't heard back from him in like a week. In my head, it's a no-go. But my time was up at the program. Luckily, I landed still on property in a residential recovery place where I'm still associated with them. Very cheap rent. And So I move in. I didn't want to move anywhere until I had a job lined up. So that didn't go according to plan. So August 2nd, I move over. August 3rd, I get a call and I get the job. So that's great. And I get this job. I start at the end of August. And here I am the full month of August, you know, just getting everything situated and still wrapping my head around the fact that I now have a job in the same city I was homeless in, helping people in the exact same position I was in, not even 5 months at the time when I got the job. Like, that's crazy. That's absolutely insane. And progress. I mean, here I am 7 months sober. I've been on the job for 2 months and I still don't like the people who put their name on the line for me with this job. They didn't know me sober. They didn't know sober Shane. They knew me as a drunk homeless person. And they put their name out there and said, this is the guy you want to hire, knowing me as a drunk homeless person. That, like, I still can't understand that. I'm extremely grateful for it, but I don't know how or why it happened. But that's where I am now. I work with homeless people, helping them get off the street in the same city I was homeless in.
Wow. Incredible. That's incredible. So how do you counsel somebody who has been where you were? I mean, what do you tell them? Obviously, you have the conviction. I mean, you've done it. You're not reading a theory. You're explaining that, hey, I was homeless too. I mean, what's the first thing you tell them?
So the first month and a half, it was a lot of training. I'm now seeing clients. So this is, and I'll start with, like, I thought it would be that simple. I thought it would be like, well, I have to separate myself from it to an extent, because a lot of people who come in are extremely discouraged. They are, I don't like to use the word victim card. I just don't like the way it sounds, but they're like, things aren't going their way. They're not coming in on a winning streak. And yes, I can't, it's hard to just look at them and be like, I can do it. Cause I don't, a lot of people take it a different ways. Some people will call me lucky and some people will, there's a lot of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. It's not jealousy, but they look at it in
animosity.
I have to phrase it a certain way to not like shove it in their face or, it's a lot more of a delicate balance than I thought it would be. I thought it would be like, I could just be like this shining trophy. It'd be like, look, it can be done, but it's not as easy as that. And I'm also learning, like, I schedule appointments with these people and you think you get an appointment in the books and the people show up and it's not that case either. And I have to remove myself again, because whenever I had appointments with people who were trying to help me, I was always there, always. So it's not as easy as I thought it would be. Walking on that tightrope of, you know, you don't want to insult anyone. You don't want, like, I'm figuring all this stuff out in time.
No, absolutely. And that's a great answer, by the way. What I can share, and I agree with you, you know, as far as the recovery community, the wellness, which, you know, depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, I mean, it's all part of the same umbrella. You think you could just give them this cookie cutter answer and it solves everything. But what you find is everybody's different, right?
Yep.
And you have to be extremely patient. And I'm not a patient guy. I don't know about you, but, you know, where you see something and you know the answer, you know how to help. It's not necessarily received that way, right? And everything in time and place. But the what you get out of it when you're actually helping somebody, actually for me, it keeps me sober. I mean, it's like rocket fuel, helping other people. They call that service, and I never understood what that meant until I actually got out and did it, like you're doing it, right?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Shane, how do you cope? Because now you actually put in a situation where it's becoming tension, because you know, you start questioning yourself, self-doubting yourself, because people aren't doing what they say they're going to do. I'm just saying that. Are you? And how do you cope with that right now? How do you stop yourself from actually going into that liquor store?
I see, when it comes to my sobriety, I don't work a program. I just throw it out there. I don't do steps. I do go to a meetings, but that's more for a social aspect of it. Like, I've received the message. The message is clear. I feel really strong in my, I know it's not in the cards for me. I can't drink. Like, I get it. I look at it like everyone gets X amount of drinking in their life, and my cup's empty. I don't have any more. Like, I'm not allowed to drink. I don't have it in my mind. Like, hey, maybe I can have, like, no, it's not in the cards for me. And I'm okay with that now. Like, there's a liquor store in Carlsbad where I got to, I mean, they all knew my name. I became friends with the cashiers and stuff. And he saw me the other day, and he was like, Shane, you never come by and say, hey, like, I know you're doing good and stuff. And I was like, man, it just feels wrong going in there. I don't, like, it has nothing to do with temptation. It just doesn't feel right to go in there. I've gone to the casinos. I've gone to like comedy clubs, like it, and those temptations just aren't there. So as far as coping, I just like do nothing really. My work schedule is pretty, with the commute and everything. I wake up at 4, I get home at 7. So I sleep when I'm off, and on the weekends I hang out with my dog. Like, I don't have much time for any tomfoolery. So no bad thoughts come sneaking in my head.
Wow. That's really commendable. And you've come far. And also another thing I wanted to, it takes a lot of courage to come back into the same place where you were homeless. So how do you react when you meet your they were your compatriots, right, before your sobriety? So how do you react, or how do they react towards you?
I am still well liked. I go by and see my close friends at the park that I frequent most. I see them every morning. I check on them. I will hang out with them for, you know, 10 minutes or so. And they're all extremely, I'm sorry. They're all extremely proud. Like I said, everyone, I was told time and time again by my fellow, you know, homeless people, what are you doing out here? You're not supposed to be here. This, like, what are you doing? Get off the streets. Everyone saw all this potential in me. And I think that's kind of what kept me going in the program, was I've been told I had potential my whole life. And I guess it was time to kind of see what that potential looked like. I'll go by and see everybody. And for the most part, everyone's just proud. Like, they're good. They're glad to see me doing what they thought I could do. Now, on the other hand, there are, you know, misery loves company. There are people who, I've had clients that come into my office that I knew out there who will openly, they won't be talking to me, but they'll be talking to another one of my coworkers and saying, look at him. He didn't have to do anything, and he got handed this and that. And I don't like to pat myself on the back, but I'm not going to diminish what I've done. I know what I've done is incredible, and I'm extremely proud of myself. But I have to, I can't lose sight of the fact that that is their reality. They believe that in their head, that that is their truth. And like, there's nothing I can do about that. So with those people, like, I mean, I'm not going to get in a confrontation about it or argue it. There's no point in where I am. Like, that would be detrimental to me. So for the most part, yeah, everyone's extremely happy. They're glad that I still, and I like going and hanging out for short periods of time. It keeps me humble. It keeps me a reminder of where I came from. Because you get, especially with my sobriety, I can't forget that. That's why I love going on the Sprinter every morning. I get to ride along and see all the encampments and all the, like, think about where I was 7 months ago.
7 months.
But go ahead.
That's not a long time, 7 months. That's incredible.
Yeah, the turnaround has been, the people here are, like, the staff here are just, I'm like the golden boy, and they're extremely impressed with how quickly things turned around for me. And when someone brought up luck to me, and it's hard for me to not say that I was lucky, but I go back to what I said earlier about when I was out there, just because I was homeless and an alcoholic, I was still a good person. I never did anyone wrong. I was always as respectful as I could be. I developed really good relationships. I planted those seeds, and they just happened to blossom at the right time.
Yeah. So the big question is, not to bring up a sore subject, but are you putting what happened with your mom and your childhood in the proper place in your head? Are you dealing with that, or it's still fresh, or how do you cope with that?
So on the surface, that all sounds terrible. Like, growing up with, I mean, I was 12 when I found out about my mom with her problem. My brother was 9. I always said, I was at the age where, I said this over and over again, I'll never be like you, and all that stuff. And that my brother would take it for the worst, and he would go down a really dark path. And that was pretty true for a long time. I didn't drink until I was 18. Went off to college, and I got through college, I got through law school. I drank a lot, but my brother did. He got into heroin right away. I don't know if he's still alive. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but he got dealt that shitty hand really early, and he took that shitty hand and ran with it. So that part I did call out. Mine was a little delayed, but like, that all sounds bad, but I had really good friends growing up, and their families were solid. Their families raised me. They were good homes. I would stay with them for weeks on end. Some of my friends' parents, like, paid for semesters of my college. Like, they, oh, wow. Really, really good people. So yeah, my blood family wasn't great, but my other families were fantastic. And then I go off to college, and I cut my family. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me 1,000 times, shame on me. Like, I was over them. So my relationship with my mother and my father were very estranged at that point. My dad died in 2000, my first year of law school, 2011. I wasn't upset. I was upset because I wasn't upset. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't care, and that bothered me, because you're supposed to care when your parents die. And then to find my mother's dead body after she killed herself, I didn't care I cared because I didn't care. Like, it was just like, dude, I'd have no parents, and like, I don't care. Something's wrong with me. And so my therapist and stuff, they're like, Shane, you've been through trauma. And I'm like, oh, if you say so, like, okay. So I probably am not dealing with it the right way, but it hasn't gotten in the way yet. Now, that could be dangerous. I did, for a long time, the whole suicide thing, I hated my mom for it, because not because of me, but that suicide to me is the most selfish thing you can do. You get to solve your problems and create a shitload for everyone else. So for my, like, I had to deal with funeral arrangements, all this stuff I did not want to deal with. My mom's sister, who I don't talk to, but she was upset, like, all having to see people at the funeral all crying. Like, my mom created a shit storm and her problems got to be solved. Like, that's not okay. But being in the program, of learning about addiction and the deep depths of hell it can take you into, that lonely, lonely place that I experienced with nights out on the streets, a part of me started to forgive her a little bit, because I know what it's like to be alone and stuck with those dark thoughts. And it, so being here kind of helped me understand where her mind was, and she didn't get the right help. And so with that side of it, I think I'm handling it okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Addiction, like I said, is no joke. It's not just a physical thing, physical dependency, but it works on your mind. Okay. Alone, isolation is a horrible thing. And so when you shut everything out and you're just left alone with your demons, you kind of better understand now what other people are going through. It's not like, well, let me tell you how bad I've had it. I mean, everybody in their own way has it horrible. There's no better bad than your, you know what I mean? It's not a comparing thing. But you're doing great. You're doing great. It's angels every single second of every day that come into your life, even for a brief moment, I believe.
Right.
Make a difference. And you're like, why are you helping me? You know, and sometimes we'll never figure that one out. But they do. They do help you. And it sounds like you've had a bunch of them throughout your life. And you're on the right track. You're doing great. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So you're working on that forgiveness, and so really, it's really commendable as well that you can go back to Carlsbad, where that was really such a traumatic, very mixed kind of emotional place to be. So that shows us your strength as well, Shane. So well done for that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's being able every morning getting off the train and walking from the transit center to the office. I walk past places I used to frequent, I'm proud of what I've done and how I've done it, and being able to walk those streets with my head held high and seeing the people that, like, places I've slept and places I, you know, just the things I've done out there, and to walk by, like, I'm just really proud of where I've came from and what I've done.
You should be.
Yes, you've come very far. Well, congratulations on that. And I have to say, because obviously we met at Showers of Blessing, it's such a different Shane that you come there smelling of alcohol. It's like, oh, Shane, I'm drunk just talking to you. So that's beautiful as well.
Yeah, and it's really freeing. Like, that obsession's been lifted. The thought doesn't even cross my mind anymore. At first, I used to think that I'd have to wake up and be like, all right, how do I get through this day without drinking? Like, how are we going to do this? And now I'm just living my life without drinking.
It's a good way to look at it. And not drinking, by the way, is not going to stop bad days from happening. It's just you're learning how to have more coping skills.
And right. I hear that all the time. And I still, like, it's taking away from my good days, because I'm always looking over my shoulder for that bad day and it hasn't come yet. Like, I'm not, So like it's robbing me of living in the moment because I'm trying to brace myself for that bad day that hasn't shown its face yet.
And hopefully that day may never come, but it is life. And again, the more coping skills you have, the more you realize how unimportant alcohol is or drugs are. The way they did it for me when I went in to get help is they made me realize that, you know, because of course I have a big ego and of course I'm invincible and there's just no way, you know, eventually you start thinking, well, maybe one day I'll become a casual drinker, which is just stupid. You can't be. If you're one of us, there ain't nothing casual about our drinking.
No.
But they explained it as just look at yourself like drinking isn't bad. But for me, I'm simply allergic to alcohol.
Yeah.
And as weird as that sounds, it just kind of allowed me to wrap my head around the fact that, hey, I'm just allergic, you know?
Yeah.
Some people can drink, some people can't. So, you know, like you, going to a restaurant that has a bar or being with friends who happen to drink doesn't bother me at all because I understand they're not the ones with the problem. It's me.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't force somebody to sniff pollen if they had allergies to pollen, you know.
Right.
You got to look at the alcohol addiction like that too. I mean, it's a silly little thing, but it actually helped me wrap my hands around the finality that I can never drink again, right? And it just made it easier for me.
Yeah, and I always had a really difficult time like grabbing my head around that, and like I just couldn't fathom, you know, I can't ever do that again. But I use that those stupid cliches a lot, and the one day at a time thing. Like I know I'm not going to drink today, so
right.
And I mean, it's worked so far. Like I know for a fact today I'm not going to drink, and tomorrow if I do the same thing I did today, I probably won't drink tomorrow either.
That's right. That's right. It gets down to that. So,
yeah.
Well, congratulations. You've come a long way. And it sounds like you've got a great attitude and you're loving life and you're appreciative and you're staying humble. All the great things that you're supposed to have, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that. Congratulations, Shane. Tell me, before we go, have you found freedom?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it like I said, the obsession's gone. I'm not a slave to my addiction anymore. Like I mean, it was, if you've been down that path, you know how it is. It's wake up and how do I get it? How do I, especially on the streets, like with no money, there was a mission. It was wake up. How do I get my medicine? How am I going to do this? I mean, my days were dedicated to it. I was lucky if I had some to wake up to in the morning to avoid the seizure. Like that is gone. I don't. And I remember in the program when it was after I got my teeth, after I'd been on the medicine for a little while and things were just, it was even before the job and knowing where I was going to live, there was a day where someone had asked me how I was doing. And I remember saying, I feel at peace. And that's where I am now. Like I'm just at ease. I wake up every morning with a smile on my face, with joy in my heart. Like I'd say that I'm about as free as I could get.
That's awesome.
I love that. So what about Shane in the future?
Well, I love where I am and what I'm doing. I have my foot in the door with a good company. I looked at this as not, like when I got to the program, I was willing to take a job anywhere. Like money's money. I need like whatever, where I landed with a professional job, but I'm back behind a desk. I have an office with my name on the door, like crazy stuff. And, I look at this as like a new career for me. The law stuff. Yeah. I busted my butt to get all that, but like, that's behind me. I'm not going to go back to that. I'd like to stay in social services and give back and give help that was given to me. Like that is where my heart is. I've never had money my entire life. Or like money is not an it's not something I'm worried about. Yeah, it helps a lot, but and I know I'm not going to get rich in this industry, but I'd like to keep venturing down this road and make an impact on people's lives.
I love that. What advice would you give to people out there who, well, are homeless, or some people are like very close to being homeless because of the situation? What advice would you give to someone who is addicted?
Don't be an asshole. You never know. Like, again, this everything that's happened to me has come because I was a good person. Like, just because you're down and out, like, don't. And that's easier said than done. That's a hard question for me to answer. Like, because I, like, where I am, I never thought that this would happen. Like, I never thought I'd have a job again. I never thought I'd live indoors again. I accepted my life as it was. Like, the fact that I have commas in my bank account again, like, that blows my mind. It's just, you just got to want it. That's all I can say is, I mean, when you're done and you just got to want it. I don't have any special powers. I didn't do any, no magic tricks or anything. It's just, I wanted the better life than I had.
I love that. Thank you, Shane. Is there anything, Dino, that you'd like to add?
No, I think it was perfect. Congratulations again, and keep going, man. Keep going.
All right. Awesome. Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Shane. It was an honor to have you here. And it's really beautiful to see your journey. So
it's something. It's not over.
No. But you know, you've been through the worst part. Now it's the exciting part.
I hope so.
It's awesome. Thank you so much, Shane.
All right. Thank you.
Awesome to have you on the show. And we'll see you soon.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you, everyone. We'll see you soon. And.